It's one of the most mysterious works in the whole Bible. The contents of this ancient book mark a decided departure from Orthodox religious convention, with a bold alienation from the things of God. Today on Insight for Living, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll teach from Solomon's personal diary, called Ecclesiastes, in a series titled Living on the Ragged Edge. We'll be surprised by the unfiltered confessions of this wealthy man, who struggled to find meaning and purpose in his life. Before we hear Chuck's sermon, we'll take plenty of time to read the passage together. Today's theme, Chasing the Wind.
Vanity of vanities, says the speaker. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. In ancient Hebrew literature, when the same word is repeated even once, it's for the purpose of emphasis. It's like our exclamation point in our English language. It's as though Solomon wants to declare the superlative, super vain, or completely empty, nothing to it. And that's the idea. Life appears to have substance, yet when you dig deeply into it on your own, you find there's nothing there. It holds out hope that it is a bright, warm dream, but when you go for it, you stumble into a cold, dark nightmare. Nothing works. Listen to Solomon's commentary on life as found in the first chapter of his journal, the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes. I'll be reading from the New Living Translation Study Bible, chapter 1. These are the words of the teacher, King David's son, who ruled in Jerusalem. Everything is meaningless, says the teacher, completely meaningless. What do people get for all their hard work under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth never changes. The sun rises and the sun sets, then hurries around to rise again. The wind blows south and then turns north. Around and around it goes, blowing in circles. Rivers run into the sea, but the sea is never full. Then the water returns again to the rivers and flows out again to the sea. Everything is wearisome beyond description. No matter how much we see, we are never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are not content. History merely repeats itself. It has all been done before. Nothing under the sun is truly new. Sometimes people say, here is something new, but actually, it is old. Nothing is ever truly new. We don't remember what happened in the past, and in future generations, no one will remember what we are doing now. I, the teacher, was king of Israel, and I lived in Jerusalem. I devoted myself to search for understanding and to explore by wisdom everything being done under heaven. I soon discovered that God has dealt a tragic existence to the human race. I observed everything going on under the sun, and really, it is all meaningless, like chasing the wind. What is wrong cannot be made right. What is missing cannot be recovered. I said to myself, look, I am wiser than any of the kings who ruled in Jerusalem before me. I have greater wisdom and knowledge than any of them. So I set out to learn everything from wisdom to madness and folly. But I learned firsthand that pursuing all this is like chasing the wind. The greater my wisdom, the greater my grief. To increase knowledge only increases sorrow.
Listening to Insight for Living, and you can find helpful Bible study tools for our study in Ecclesiastes by going to insightworld.org. And now the message from Chuck Swindoll, Chasing the Wind.
In bold black sprawling letters of graffiti, these two words appeared on the walls of a university library. Perhaps they were written by some disillusioned student who had spent endless hours in the pursuit of some intellectual study, only to realize how futile the whole thing was. And so, with sprawling characters, he wrote, "Apathy rules." Perhaps if he had had more time, he would have written what Malcolm Muggeridge wrote about the futility of education. Education, the great mumbo-jumbo and fraud of the ages, purports to equip us to live and is prescribed as a universal remedy for everything from juvenile delinquency to premature senility. For the most part, it serves to enlarge stupidity, inflate conceit, enhance credulity, and put those subjected to it at the mercy of brainwashers with printing presses, radio and television at their disposal. How bitter is the disillusionment of such reality. Apathy rules. Have you noticed? Every time I hear that word apathy or hear somebody refer to it, I remember the words of a man who taught high school just long enough to realize he shouldn't be teaching high school. It took him 3 or 4 years to come to that realization. He had one of those classes filled with students that did not want to learn. In fact, it was a class that you had to come very early to get a back seat. And a few young men got there late, and they were stuck on the front with their cutoffs and thongs and sneakers without socks, and they couldn't care less what the subject was. And he was just up to here with their apathy. And so he grabbed a piece of chalk, and he turned around, and he began to slash away in big foot-high letters this word, A-P-A-T-H-Y. And he underlined it twice, and he slammed an exclamation point on it, and he broke the chalk, and he slung it against the board, and he turned around. You could just see the fumes just rising. And one student up front was trying to read the word. Apathy. So he leans over and says to his buddy, "What in the world is apathy?" And his friend says, "Who cares?" Apathy rules. Who cares? Life isn't simply tragic. Life is dull. H.L. Mencken said that. The basic fact about human experience is not that it is a tragedy, but that it is a bore. It is not that it is predominantly painful, but that it is lacking in any sense. Now, for some strange reason, we push out of our minds the true words of Thoreau, "Most men lead lives of quiet desperation." We don't want to believe that. Cheerleaders who fill motivation seminars across America and around the world try to tell us lies. I can think of about 4 of them. You've heard them all. "Laugh and the world laughs with you. Cry and you cry alone." I've found quite the opposite is true. "Laugh and you laugh alone. Cry and you get a crowd. The whole world will cry with you." There's another one. "Every day, in every way, our world is getting better, better, better." I'd like to meet the guy that first wrote those words. I'll bet you anything he's dead. There's another one. The "light at the end of the tunnel. It's always there. Keep looking for it." Murphy was right. It's the headlamp of an oncoming train. That's what that light is at the end of the tunnel. And this one comes from the pop music world of yesteryear. "Things never are as bad as they seem. So dream, dream, dream." Want to sing it with me? No, things are not as bad as they seem. They're worse than they seem. And dreaming won't make them better. I read this past week of a man who looked like he lived all of life on top of all circumstances. Never had a down day. Came to work happy, went home cheery, and the people around him couldn't stand the fact that he had some secret in life They kept wondering if that was the real truth. One man found out one day it's not the real truth. As a matter of fact, he said to his friend over coffee at the break that morning in the office, now I know why you're always so cheery. You've really got it made. Just yesterday afternoon, I was driving along in a taxi, and I passed you. You were sitting there with this beautiful young woman whose back was to the street, and you had this lovely sidewalk cafe situation, and you were listening intently. And the guy said, as he whispered, let me tell you the truth. That lovely young woman is really my wife, who was telling me she was leaving me because what looked like a sidewalk cafe is our furniture out on the street. Things aren't as bad as they seem. They're worse. Why do they tell us those lies? Why do they keep telling us to look for the light at the end of the tunnel? Why do people under the sun amass great fortunes and great seminars all around the world trying to tell people there's a bright, beautiful tomorrow? Just grab for it. Go for the gusto. Hitch your wagon to a star and you'll make it someday. I want to know what it is. What is it? You know why they tell us those things? There's not four answers, there's one. To make us believe there's purpose and happiness if we simply keep on hoping. It ain't so. The world isn't wonderful. The world is wicked, corrupt, and depraved. The work isn't enriching and fulfilling. It's tiring and it's futile and it blows up in your face. People aren't kind and generous. People are selfish and cruel. Life on planet Earth isn't a great big bowl of cherries. It's the pits. It is boring. It is empty. It is a grind. It is chasing the wind. That's true if you're educated or untaught. That's true if you're young or old. It's true if you're a professional person or blue collar. It's true if you live in a penthouse or a little one-house rented flat. And it won't be different if your circumstance changes. Don't believe me. Believe God. Many years ago, there lived a king who decided he would write in a journal what he had discovered about life. Since he had peace at his disposal, his father had left a rather large fortune in his care. His father had fought the battles, and now his son enjoyed peace. 40 years of it. Imagine 4 decades in a nation without war. And instead of things going into the defense budget, things now went into his pursuit to discover life. And he was so thoughtful that he sat down with a pen and he wrote in his journal the truth. There's not a lie in his book. In fact, God cared so much about what the man wrote as he looked at it through the windows of his castle. God said, "This is good enough for the world to read." And he preserved it for the ages. It appears in the Old Testament under the heading Ecclesiastes. Strange name for the book. It means preacher. Or one who addresses an assembly, if you prefer, speaker of the house of life. Someone who can declare in an inspired, absolutely inerrant manner the truth about life. And he saves you all the money, time, and energy. Don't bother, just read what he says. And it'll be so depressing, you'll feel like you can leave under the door, not through it. The guy tells the truth. His basic premise, he doesn't make us wait till the end of the book to read. He says it right at the beginning. Vanity of vanities, says the speaker, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, in Hebrew literature, when there is a repeating of the same word, even once, though here it's repeated 3 times, vanity, 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 vanity. The purpose is a lot like our exclamation point or underscoring. It is to declare the superlative. Super vain, completely empty. Nothing to it. Apathy rules. It looks like it's substance, and you dig into it, and it's nothing. It holds out hope that it is a bright, warm light, and you go for it, and it is a cold, empty nightmare. Put it together, if it is under the sun, it won't satisfy. It won't work. He even asks, verse 3, what advantage does mankind have in all his work? Good question. All his work which he does under the sun. The key word is advantage. The term advantage is translated from the original word, which means that which is left over when a given transaction is complete. We would say, when it is all said and done, when you turn the light out at the end of life, when you close the door to your business and walk away, when you leave the fresh grave of someone you loved and related closely alongside, when it's all said and done, the surplus, the final advantage, what does it say? Zero. Nothing to it. David Allen Hubbard, president of Fuller Seminary, writes, "Futile days we can expect. What we plan will miscarry. Paths that look promising will peter out and force us to backtrack. Pillars that we lean on will collapse and send our hopes tumbling down on us. When sickness strikes or financial reverses hit, futile days stretch into empty weeks or months." I smiled when I read this. There have been times when we heaved huge sighs as we ripped December's page from the calendar and welcomed a new year that offered better days in the old. The futility is akin to irony because it's full of surprises. We find it where we least expect it. Values we treasure prove false. Efforts that should succeed come to failure. Pleasures that should satisfy increase our thirst. Ironic futility, futile irony, that is the color of life as seen through the preacher's eyes. Are you seeing that? Are you willing to believe that? Will you accept that, not as some other man's journal, but as the truth for your life? If you're living out your marriage under the sun and you're not living above or beyond the sun, your marriage is on its way to decay. If you're doing your business and pulling it off with your strength and your wisdom and your might and your plans, and God is sort of absent from it, you'll call on Him if you need Him. You can forget real success. You certainly will not know fulfillment. If you're pursuing an education and you've gotten this degree and you're going for another one and you have all these people around you telling you it's worth it, you can do it, and it's all being pursued for your purpose and with your goals in mind, I got tragic news for you. You're going to wind up bored and frustrated. If your world is work, you've got the same kind of future. Hugh Prather writes in his book, Notes to Myself, if I had only forgotten future greatness and looked at the green things and reached out to those around me and smelled the air and ignored the forms and the self-styled obligations and heard the rain on my roof and put my arms around my wife, perhaps it's not too late. We who worship our work and play at our worship have gotten things all fouled up. The writer tells us before we even attempt, it's vain under the sun. Look at your work. If it's like mine, the inbox looks like the Leaning Tower, right? You never finish. Your plans for a sale collapse right in front of your eyes, and it's always mysterious. Your partnerships end in a premature manner, and somebody is offended. If I hear another story of a broken partnership, I think I'll scream, because it inevitably leads to someone being offended. And this happens among Christians just as readily as non-Christians. And don't tell me another story. Your financial savings shrink in value. They don't rise. You toil for a promotion, and the guy next to you gets the promotion. Promises for relief from the government fail. There's nothing left. There's no advantage. Are you getting the depressed picture? Good. That's what the writer wants you to see. You want some examples? You want to hear life under the sun? Look at verse 4. A generation goes and a generation comes. There's futility in the cycle. There's a group of people born this day, and there is a group of people who will die this day. There will be beautiful people like Princess Grace who will die. Bright and promising people like Churchill will die. Tough and determined people like Jack Dempsey will die. Gifted and entertaining people like Natalie Wood will die. People who make us laugh like John Belushi will die. And many of them longing for some kind of happiness that even death could bring. Generation comes, a generation goes. But maybe there's hope in the earth since it remains forever. Maybe somehow in God's spinning of this planet into space, he put purpose within the earth. Well, originally he did, but Romans 8:20 says that it's subjected to futility. Do you know that? In fact, it groans, it travails as if a woman in labor waiting for the birth to purpose. Romans 8:22. It waits for there to be a relief to the groaning. There's not any happiness on this earth or within it. Look at some illustrations. Look at the sun. The sun rises and the sun sets, and it hastens around the other side of this big old globe to rise again. And I see monotony written in Solomon's words. Isn't it funny the difference between Solomon and Jeremiah? Stop and think about that. Jeremiah says that even the rising of the sun reminds him, great is his faithfulness. But Solomon says the rising of the sun, yuck. Why? Because Solomon is seeing only as far as the sun, not beyond it. Remember, his purpose and his pursuit is under the sun. I won't let you forget that.
Listening to Insight for Living, and a message from Chuck Swindoll based on his study in Ecclesiastes 1. He's titled his sermon, Chasing the Wind. Now please stay with us. You'll hear a closing comment from Chuck coming up in just a moment. You can hear today's program again by going to our website and streaming the audio, or you can download the convenient mobile app in order to hear Chuck's teaching anywhere you go. And remember, there's a growing community of like-minded friends discussing today's topic on our Facebook page as well. You'll find all these resources and more by going to insightworld.org. You still have a few short weeks remaining in your summer schedule before the busy school year and the fall season kicks in. And if you received Chuck's letter this month, you know that he'd like to add an important book to your vacation reading list. We'll provide a copy right away when you give a financial gift to help support the ministry of Insight for Living on this station and on the web. This hand-selected book is written by Jerry Bridges and called The Pursuit of Holiness.
I love the metaphor Jerry Bridges used to describe a profound spiritual principle. He wrote this: just as the farmer plows his field, plants the seeds, and waters his crop, he knows he cannot cause the seed to germinate, nor can he produce the rain and sunshine to yield results. You understand that farming is a joint venture between God and the farmer. The farmer cannot do what God alone must do. At the same time, God will not do what the farmer should do. When we hear God say these words, "Be holy, for I am holy," we know that this impossible standard requires a relationship of cooperation. God has made it possible for us to walk in holiness. At the same time, He has given to us the responsibility of doing the walking. That's what Jerry Bridges' book is all about. Here at Insight for Living, we're extremely cautious. I would say we're even fussy about the materials we offer to you. We're very choosy. Resources must be theologically sound in order to make our short list of recommendations. They also must be readable. And we know that a book must be worthy of the time that you and others will invest reading it. And so without reservation and with hearty enthusiasm, I highly recommend this book to you. Get your copy today. I so want you to read The Pursuit of Holiness by Jerry Bridges.
All right, thanks, Chuck. And here's how to receive your copy. It's yours when you give a donation of any amount. If you're listening in the United States, you can request the book when you call 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. That's the classic book from trusted author Jerry Bridges called The Pursuit of Holiness. It comes with our thanks for your donation of any amount. This ministry is entirely dependent on the faithful donations from loyal friends who share our passion for God's Word and want to see Chuck's teaching continue. Thank you for your contribution today. And when you give, be sure to mention the book Chuck described, The Pursuit of Holiness. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker. Chuck Swindoll's sermon called Chasing the Wind continues Thursday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Chasing the Wind, was copyrighted in 1983, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.